views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good evening. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. It is a Tuesday night, March the 20th of 2018. We have a very interesting and I would say unique topic to me. I did a little research before the show on climate gentrification, and we will have one of our family members, Black Talk Radio. She's been on as a guest in the past and listener of the station. Sister LaDonna be coming on to talk to us about this real estate scam that is operating possibly, who knows, all across these states where they say will be impacted by climate change. But it may be a real estate scam and part of gentrification that we've been talking about for so many decades in places like New York City and other urban metropolitan areas where real estate developers push people out and then install properties that raises the tax taxes on the property for the entire neighborhood, and then people can't even pay their taxes. Those properties go into tax lien status. The county might end up auctioning it. So I mean, it's a diabolical scheme to deprive people of their property. So in just a bit here, we will be speaking to, again, Sister LaDonna about this climate change gentrification. I'm running just a little late now. I'm trying to get out my notifications that we are on air live. We were having a very spirited conversation on a prior show, Tando Radio Show, and kind of ran longer. And so that's why I'm running a little late getting on air. But I'm here. It's good to be back on these airways on this Tuesday. So before we bring on Sister LaDonna, again, I stated that I did some research. And so I'm going to play this YouTube video that I found from Miami that was put together. I will give you that information once I pull it up. But the high school students were involved in this. And, you know, Haiti has been in the news. It was going back to the earthquake, obviously, in 2010, 2011. The State Department, which was run by Hillary Clinton, and then bringing in her husband and the Clinton Foundation and other corporations and the exploitation of Haiti, and then with Donald Trump's immigration policy, how Haitians won't be protected anymore, and he's going to deport Haitians, and so also the Haitian community in Miami is saying that it's a victim of this climate gentrification. Again, this is a new subject to me, so I'm not well versed in that, but I thought it was interesting enough that we bring on when I was given the opportunity to talk about this as a topic by Sister LaDonna, who has also another element to this, the nonprofit industrial complex is how I think I heard a former Panther elder in the community, Brother Lorenzo Comboa Irvin, former political prisoner. That's what he called it. He coined that phrase. That's the first time I heard somebody call it that. And you had these 501c3 nonprofits who are getting millions of dollars, and then they start these organizations, and then the CEOs of these organizations, the presidents, the founders, whatever, are paying themselves these big salaries. Then they go into certain communities, and they pay much, much smaller salaries to people who live there to help perpetrate this possible scam. And there is one organization that she will talk about, and again, we'll discuss that with her in just a bit. But first, we want to give a listen to this video. It is posted in BTR community for tonight's program, BTR News with Scotty Reed. So let me give you the details on this. This was uploaded to YouTube by Linda Chung, I believe. They published this on December the 5th, 2017. And it was created by Team Cool Cats, Anthony Zaleya, Eva Pacheco, Lauren Cousins, Matthias Ghana, and the Cushman High School students. So we're going to let them set us up, and then we'll bring in Sister LaDonna to give us some details on what she is seeing in her area. All right, let's
cue this up. Climate change is real, and it is happening faster than we can control. It is affecting many different types of people. Above all, it is unfairly affecting people in vulnerable communities, people who live in low-lying areas prone to flooding, and people who live in low-income communities.
Well, I'm the director of a one-stop center, a social advocacy group. We provide wraparound services to strengthen families because we believe that strong families make strong communities. But what's more important, we organize our members around issues of importance such as gentrification, immigration, deportation, what else? Statelessness in the DR, in the Dominican Republic, affordable housing, rent control, wherever there is injustice, iniquity, we organize our members around those issues. Little Haiti used to start from 36th Street to 87th Street and from Northwest 6th Avenue to Northeast 4th Court. But as a result of gentrification, a lot of the Haitian families which built this community, because in the late 70s, early 80s, the first inhabitants of this community were Haitian refugees and Haitian immigrants. And right now, we are at the last leg of gentrification, where those who are still living in the area, they are being pressured. People are knocking on their doors, forcing them to sell. There is really a psychological war being implemented against these families, pressuring them to leave the area.
My name is Jean Mapou, and I am the owner of the bookstore. The gentrification is here, and gentrification is pushing us out. We have several problems. The problem is that the first generation, it's getting old. It's living, it's dying, retiring. Refugees are not coming the way they used to come in the 60s, in the 80s, and the 90s. So there is a lack of refugees to replace those who are leaving.
Hi, my name is Paulette Riches, and I'm a resident of Liberty City. And I support and partnership with the Little Haiti community because both communities are suffering the same struggles in regards to gentrification and now with the impactment of climate gentrification, right? And so we need each other's support and any other support to help us to fight, realtors, developers from stealing our homes and our communities. The president doesn't believe in climate change.
Yeah.
And so my thing is for the next generation, our youth, that we're passing the baton to. Unfortunately, we're a part of, like, you know, messing up the environment, so to speak. So we have to really help to get it back in line for your sake and my granddaughter's and my great-grand's sake, right? And so for me, just even hearing that, I know, although he says that, we don't believe that, right? Because we actually know that climate change is real. I mean, it's honest, we can tell, right? Whether it's from the extreme hurricane, the extreme cold, forest fire, you know what I'm saying? Whatever it is, we actually know that there is an issue with climate, don't we?
Like I said, gentrification is affecting everything, you know, in terms of people moving in and people being moved out. That's the whole thing right there, you know. That's what Marlena was explaining, you know. Don't come into a community to disrupt the community. If you want to help, help.
Organizations like City of Miami and New Florida Majority are trying to bring awareness and solutions to climate justice issues in Miami.
All right, we are going to leave it right there. Now, let me just say this, because we have a very diverse listening audience, and we have people on our station, they don't believe climate change is real. So, or they are not in agreement also with what's causing extreme temperatures that you heard the lady speak about on that clip. Okay, so that's not what we're talking about tonight. What is real, undebatable and indisputable is that climate gentrification is real. People are losing their properties, losing their homes, losing their businesses due to the politics of climate change. And real estate developers are taking advantage of that. All right, so without further delay, we want to welcome in Sister LaDonna. Sister LaDonna, I did not share your full name because I did not know whether or not if you want to make that public, but I do believe that you're joining us from the other side of the country in California, and you're saying y'all seeing some similar climate gentrification there. So first, if you would reintroduce yourself to the Black Talk Radio audience, and let's tackle this topic.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Thank you, and it's good to speak to you again.
Good. Well, it's good to be talking to you again, Scotty, and I want to start off by just saying thank you, you know, for having these topics on your station, because, you know, you've covered a number of things that the community actually faces, and this is one of them, so I want to say thank you.
No doubt. It's our mission.
Now, I hear an echo on my end. You're not hearing an echo on your end, are you?
It'll go away if you keep talking. Sometimes the...
Okay. I thought maybe it was just my janky phone. So, anyway, so, yes. I mean, you have summed it up pretty much, you know, talking about the climate gentrification, which for a lot of us wasn't obvious in the beginning. You know, they meaning these companies that... or organizations, agencies, businesses, they started under this 100 Resilient Cities kind of initiative that the Rockefeller Foundation and other, you know, various nonprofits and folks got going around the United States. So it sounded good in that their focuses were really focusing in disadvantaged communities, helping them, us, because I'm in one of them, understand, or we thought they were helping us understand sea level rise, because, you know, a lot of our areas have flooding and you know, fires like we had here in Northern California that then turned into, like, mudslides and things like that. Actually, it happened in Southern California, too. So when they started talking about sea level rise, you know, it made sense in that we wanted to begin to prepare for some of these kinds of disasters and be proactive as opposed to reactive. So, you know, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, this is a great idea. You know, let me jump into this and, you know, do what we normally do, get the information, share it with our communities and circles that we're in and start these conversations. So as we got into it, though, you know, I began to really kind of suspect the process that in their mission statements, you know, this being a kind of nonprofit scope and the whole program was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. So, you know, in that mindset, I'm thinking, okay, you know, normal, we engage, you get funded for a certain scope of work. But when they say community driven and community led, that means that community is at the table in the very beginning of these processes, and they help guide the discussions, the focus, you know, the activities. They help put this thing together. Well, that's not what happened here, is that they claim they were, you know, wanting community to engage, and especially our poor disadvantaged communities, but they had actually already came with agendas. And then they would put forth agreements, you know, that the communities and they would, you know, are supposed to agree to, but they would constantly change the terms. And so, you know, I then had gotten invited to a meeting. Actually, I was initially contacted by one of their businesses that was called, I think it was Margie Ruddick. They were an architectural firm, which the structure of this is set up that they have this company, RBD, which is Resilient by Design, that sounds similar to the Resilient Cities, you know, 100 cities, but they all use that term resilience or resilient. So in our case here in Northern California, it was called Resilient by Design. So it's them, and then there is the design teams, and collectively they are supposed to then come and help, you know, identify community members and community groups and individuals and businesses, and we're supposed to form this work group and begin to, you know, focus on sea level rise using everyone's expertise at the table. And even their mission statements or their goals were to come at this from an equitable focus and approach, that the community would be on the same equitable level as the businesses and, you know, the decision makers. Well, clearly that's not what happened, not in our case. And then I find out neither did it really happen in any of the communities here in the Bay Area, because they had set up like 10 communities, and each community was supposed to be the RBD kind of facilitating the process with the design team. And as we got into it, we found out real quick that basically what they wanted was just a black head count to claim they were actually engaging in, you know, equitable processes, including the community, in making decisions to stabilize the poor areas where we know the infrastructures and the flooding and, you know, just the cities that are pretty much neglected. They come in with these visuals and they constantly still keep pumping, you know, we wanna react now, as opposed to if sea level rise hits us. So they kind of use a fear factor. Now, mind you, as you start to dig through this, you also see they, in their budgeting, they're given initially, like, we can take New York, for instance. They gave them, I believe it was $5 million for a year. And I might not have it exactly right, but I'm really close, because the same pattern is being played out here. And it was also played out in Miami and Tennessee and other states. And so what they do is they give an initial like $5 million grant for a year. And the organizations like RBD, the Resilient by Design, comes in, and then they decide in the communities who they're going to engage. But they make you think the community is deciding this.
Let me ask a couple of questions, but just also for those who are listening now and or listening later on the podcast, I will link in the description a link to tonight's story, because I got a couple of other stories that I want to share real quickly before I go off air. But I have linked to resilientbayarea.org. That's the website of the organization that you sent me, LaDonna. And I'm sitting here looking at each site. You mentioned the 10 sites so that people can get a visual that want to check that out. I'll just share this quick tidbit from, again, this is coming from one of those organizations that are getting $1 million grants to engage the community, but they're not really engaging with established community leaders and organizations, real grassroots organizations. That's what it sounds like you're saying, LaDonna. And they're basically picking proxies and giving them a little, you know, salary, a plate full of butter biscuits, nowhere as big as the share that they're getting. So this is what the site says. It's on the section talking about meet the sites, and this is in the Bay Area in California. It says, after months of early research and exploration, connecting with communities throughout the Bay Area, learning our history, and bringing in the best of science, 10 local sites threatened by climate change have been selected for the collaborative design phase of the challenge. During the design phase, local residents, public officials, engineers, architects, and other experts will come together to develop resilient solutions that address the impacts of climate change and regional inequality before disaster strikes. So, like, you characterize this. Okay, whether you believe in climate change as a science or not, or if you believe that the Earth or the planet has these natural cycles of bad inclement weather, and the sea levels will rise. Well, okay, whatever you think the cause is, the sea level, those are things that can be documented, and it has a real impact on coastal areas, and people are being gentrified under the guise of preparation. Because we, like Dave say on Tando, we don't want to be scared. We want to always be prepared. So we should evaluate, you know, all of this, and then see the different ways it's impacting our communities. All right, LaDonna, so I just wanted to share that quick bit, and please continue.
No, and you're hitting it on the head. And, you know, when you see that it says Resilient Bay Area, that's, again, another name, because the one that we've dealt with is Resilient by Design. Then they have Resilient Bay Area, and then they have Spurs, and they have Greenbelt. And one common denominator about all of those organizations is they are primarily, I would say, 99.9% white. Now, if they do have a person of color, is usually only one, just to claim that, you know, that inclusiveness that we know really isn't inclusive, it's been exclusive. But that's also a pattern, you know. And so when it comes to the equitable part, you know, the money, the design team is given a $250,000 budget to work with. And then they came to community, and that number was all over the place. Initially, they told us it would be $25,000 per organization. And then for the, like, community, say, leaders or liaisons or advisors, they were supposed to give them anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 a month to engage. And they just kept stalling on all of it. But mind you, the design team that had the architects and the engineers and the developers, that they never would divulge that the developers are playing this major part in there, they were given an advance of $50,000 to $100,000. And then as they went through various, you know, phases every so many months, then they're getting the additional money. However, the community to date still hadn't gotten anything. So those of us, what we did is we started to meet and connect the dots. And I started making phone calls saying, you know, what's really going on here? And I actually started sending out emails to people too, because at first, even from our own side, I was getting, you know, folks telling me, don't make noise, you know, stop making noise, or what was the term, make good noise, don't make bad noise. And I'm like, you know what, from what I'm observing, somebody need to be making noise here, because we're being played. And sure enough, folks started kind of comparing and realizing, wait a minute, you're not going to use us. So from Vallejo to Oakland to San Francisco, those of us in the, you know, communities of color, we begin to say, no, hold on a minute. We're not signing off on this thing. And, excuse me, they went from $25,000 per organization to $25,000 to cover the community side. Now, mind you, the community side had anywhere from, say, 5 to 15 or 20, some maybe 30 organizations that were supposed to engage. And you're supposed to divide this money to outreach to other people and, you know, hold meetings and be engaged. And then we pulled a halt and said, wait a minute, no, we're not going to sign these agreements. And we're not going to remain in these processes because you guys are pimping us, because that's what you're doing. You just want to get to May. Because the deadline is May.
Let me
could write up this report and finalize it and say, yeah, we engage these poor communities, right? Help them out. And then they turn around and go back and get anywhere from a half billion to $1 billion.
Let me give, I'm sorry, Sister LaDonna, let me break it down for in layman terms, so to speak, not to say that the Black Talk Radio audience doesn't understand what you said, but just to give them a different picture and a peek behind the curtain, because I've obtained grants from larger, one grant to engage the community around the 2010 census. So when you're saying engage, I'm taking you mean public education or public propaganda coming from me to encourage the community to get behind something. In my case, it was to fill out the census. So I am a state nonprofit, and thinking about converting to a 501c3 to open up some other opportunities. But one of the reasons
you should absolutely do that.
Right. But in that instance, I partnered with a buddy who had a 501c3. This big white organization had gotten a rather large grant. I don't know how much they got, but they were offering many grants. So I got, but you had to be a 501c3. So I applied with him as my sister organization, right? Or whatever, my co-signer,
your
basically.
Co-sponsor.
Yeah, co-sponsor. There you go. Thank you. Yeah. And so we obtained $5,000 to promote the census to the Black community in Charlotte and another Black community in North Carolina. I think it's Mount Airy. I forget the name of that particular place. So, but that's what you mean when you're saying that they were going to give X amount of dollars to community organizations to, quote unquote, engage, which is a cleaned up version of saying to promote our agenda.
That's right. To basically sign off and legitimize them that they are supporting poor, disadvantaged communities who normally, you know, wouldn't be at the table. But you're absolutely right. And let me say this, you know, the nonprofit sector and the grant world and philanthropy can be a real benefit and has been a benefit to many of us in, you know, throughout the United States and throughout the world. I mean, if done properly, it really can benefit and offers the chance for people to be able to become self-sustaining if it's done in a proper way. The problem comes in the way these grants are structured, that actually come down from the Rockefeller Foundations and those types of foundations that allow these processes to go on. And so what you're doing with your platform is huge to even have these conversations, because a lot of, you know, media and those that have the platforms won't have these difficult conversations, you know? And so we're never able to really put the pieces of puzzle or connect the dots, because folks are afraid that if they do open up these discussions, that, you know, they may not get that next grant. But again, if it's done right, and especially, you know, if you have a 501c3, it opens up a lot of opportunities that you wouldn't normally have. But, you know, I would just say this, though. In these processes and the way this thing has been set up, this is really pimping poor people and black folks and our suffering. They're benefiting. They're getting the monies. They get that nice salary. And when I say they set themselves up with some nice salaries, their benefits are huge. And we end up with the pennies and the damage that's left over, whether that be gentrification that we know, looking at this process and you begin to peel back the layers, you labeled it exactly right when you called it climate gentrification, because that is, at least in my opinion, the underlining focus of what they're really trying to do. And we know that because we ended up at a meeting about a week ago. And we weren't supposed to be there, but another progressive environmental justice organization that they invited to speak there, their program person is not a black person. This is a person of another color. But to her credit, she saw also, you know, the need to include our communities in there. And so there was an opening. She invited us in to speak and to share, you know, what we've been going through. And at that meeting, sure enough, they had these huge plans of redeveloping these prime areas that's located off the waterways and in prime areas, which is where, you know, a lot of the black older homeowners are, that's got prime properties. They want to go in and wipe all that out. And what they said is they want to do it in a structure kind of like Italy that will sustain the surrounding, you know, environment that is exposed to potential sea level rise.
When, as I read from this website, and let me open up the phone lines real quickly. We're just going up to 9 o'clock tonight. So if you have a question or comment for Sister LaDonna, give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit ** to unmute yourself. So when they're talking about, for example, Resilient Bay Area, which I think is the same organization, that's the website name, but I'm seeing all kind of different names and what have
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
So, but when they're talking about they're including, like, where's that section? Engineers and architects and what have you, are those the real estate developers who want that prime property you just described to begin with? And
I believe so. And that's the design team when I talked about.
Or they might fall under other experts. Other experts will come together.
Right.
Yeah.
That's them. And you have to really dig and push to get them to divulge, are there developers in this process? Mm-hmm. And they've outright lied to us, from Vallejo to San Francisco to Oakland. And see, the thing about us here in California is when it comes to environmental justice and gentrifying our people, we don't play. We push back hard. And so that's what we've done. And we have not allowed them to keep lying to us. We've peeled back. Yes, there are developers that's involved in this, and it makes it even more suspicious. And, you know, with the fact that they weren't forthcoming with it, that we had to keep demanding to mm-hmm. get the information.
No transparency. And
none.
We do have a call, looks like, from the Florida area. 786, I believe, is your prefix. 786. You're on Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed and Sister LaDonna. We're talking about climate gentrification. Give us your name and please add to the conversation. 786, did you have a comment?
Hello?
Yes, I hear you. Greetings.
Oh, great. I was listening. I didn't know if you could come in. My name is Eric, and I'm working on climate change issues in this community here. And I heard when you first came on, I heard about New Florida Majority, and I heard about gentrification and climate gentrification. And the problem that I have with that, and I'm going to push back with New Florida Majority, is that I live in an area where my home was flooded out with 4 feet of water during the hurricane. There was a lot of issues around resiliency and all that stuff here. But when you have all these people at the table, I'm in one of the most affected areas, but there's no outreach to this area. So, and there's a lot of sisters and brothers involved in this process that are not in the community doing the work that they say that they're doing. And I think it's important to stress that point, that, you know, if they're at the table and they are not representing the most underrepresented communities that when I come out of my door, I have to put on boots up to my knees in order to go past, to get out the door to go to the trash can. People have to park their cars 5 blocks away, and you have people that's supposed to be advocating for my community that are part of New Florida Majority and all these other organizations. And then when you call them and tell them that you don't know who they are and they're not here doing the work that they're supposed to do, and when they do come to these communities, they go to homeowners, but they do not come to Black and Latino low-income residents who are suffering the most, and ask them what do they need and what's going on with them. But instead, they try to attack them instead of doing what they're supposed to do.
Caller.
So if we're going to be in this environmental justice movement, and if we're going to fight for fairness in communities, you cannot just be in the Haitian part of town and doing this work and saying you're fighting for everybody in this community. But when I'm sitting here and the people in my community are flooded out with 3 feet of water every time it comes tide, and then you're telling me that you're advocating, but we don't know you and we don't see you, and then we push back, you're talking about, you don't know what we're talking about. But yet, still, we're the most affected. So how are you doing work if you're not addressing the most affected people?
Right. Let me clarify something from the caller, and I think we have pointed out when I mentioned earlier the nonprofit industrial complex. And
yeah,
these people getting these organizations getting the millions of dollars in grants from places like the Rockefeller, you know, Foundation that Sister LaDonna mentioned. And then they come to our communities and they find individuals who belong to so-called grassroots organizations. And then they basically bribe them. So we did, we did point that out at the beginning. But let me make clear, this is a issue or a topic that's new to me. I'm still learning. Sister LaDonna contacted me yesterday and said, hey, you need to talk about this climate gentrification. You know, we got this going on in California. And I was like, I don't know much about it, but if you can send me some information. And so also today I took the time out to do just a little research, and I was like, well, let me look at, you know, climate change, real estate scams that may be happening, see what I come up with. Then I came across the term climate gentrification, and that's how I came to that video focusing on Little Haiti. So I just shared that for some background information. I'm not advocating for any of the organizations that was highlighted in that video, but it's new to me.
That's what I was going to say to Eric, that he might have missed that part of it. But
oh no,
Eric,
I heard that. I was very clear on that. I was very clear on that. But what I'm saying,
but your point is well taken.
He started off with these organizations, and that what I'm saying is that these organizations have to be held accountable, and they just cannot push. They cannot push Blacks up that are not willing to ask these organizations the hard questions within inside these organizations.
No. Absolutely. But this is what I was going to add too. I totally agree with everything you're saying, because we were able to connect on this issue and connect. It ain't only just happening in California, right? It's happening in Miami, even in South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee. You throw a dot and it's happening all over, and it's targeting our people as well. But one thing that we also have to call out is our black people who are willing to be, who will go to the lowest bidder. Instead of them holding out and say, no, we're not going to allow this to go on, they can always find that one that's going to side with them and go along with it. And have we not experienced that here in California, where there were those that accepted that little bit of nothing to engage with them and give them that out to make it look like they're engaging our folks, right? And it's happening there, obviously, in Miami as well and all over.
Well, caller, I do thank you for sharing that information, and definitely hope that your situation improves the community that you are in. And, you know, we do have to hold people accountable. So I hope, but I appreciate what you added to the conversation. Did you have anything else as we get ready to wrap up?
No, I just think that it's important for people to get around these issues of climate change and to really become informed about what's going on in these communities. And not only that, we must, as a people, hold black people accountable when they're in positions of power and supposed to be helping people. We need to educate ourselves around the issues and not let these people just come in and say that they're doing stuff in your community and they're not. You get on the internet and you read these things, and these people are saying they're doing this in your community, they're doing that in your community. And you say, I've never seen these people. And then when you call these organizations, and these organizations are organizations with white heads or Spanish heads, but with black people, putting black people out in the front saying that they're doing this work. And when you say, well, look, I haven't seen you, they say, well, I can't knock on every door. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. I live in a building with 20 families. You haven't knocked on this door. I live in a building with 121 families across the street. You haven't knocked on their door. And it's a building down the street from me that has 100 families in it. You haven't knocked on their door. So how are you saying you're doing this work? And then you have black people trying to push back, telling you they're doing the work instead of coming out in the community and saying, look, we overlooked you, that we need to do this work, as opposed to trying to attack you with this group thinking mindset. And I just think that it's important as advocates, and especially black advocates, that we hold our people accountable. And that's it. That you cannot be signing off on things saying you're helping our people, and in actuality, you're not. It's unacceptable, and you're going to get pushback, and you're going to get challenged.
Most certainly.
I agree.
Well, thank you, caller, and you have a blessed evening.
And you too, brother. And keep up the good work, and because this is needed. Like this is needed, and we need to do everything to make sure that you're successful and that this information gets out so more people can get on and more topics can come on, and we can not only just have topics but information that can definitely help move whatever the work that we're doing forward, as opposed to not just talking, but also giving out the information that can make moves, that we can make moves with.
All right. Well, thank you. And I would encourage you to connect perhaps with LaDonna offline. You can forward me your contact information. You can text it to me at our business line, which is 704-817-2161. That's 704-817-2161. If you could text me your information, I'll forward that to LaDonna. Perhaps her group can give your group or your community some of that information you just talked about and their experience there. Absolutely. On that side of the country. Thank you again. You have a blessed evening.
Okay, take it easy. Peace.
We have another caller. Brother Rio is on the line chiming in from the Georgia area. Georgia certainly has a coast. I don't know if they're pushing gentrification under the cover of climate change off the coast of Georgia. But Brother Rio, what did you have to add to our conversation on climate gentrification? Check your mute button, Brother Rio. We can't hear you. We're unable to hear you. Brother Otis, we'll go to Brother Otis. Brother Otis, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, good evening, Scotty. I didn't catch all of the program. I was doing a few errands, but I'd like to say something to the young man that just got off. One of the main things you can do if you have been overlooked is certified mail to your local newspaper, also to the news stations that are there, makes them have to document your correspondence to them. You can't just sit around and be upset because the people aren't being accountable, because obscurity and hiding in the wings is what they do best. So once you start getting something documented, it may seem like only one or two people. You say you got a building of 20 people. All you have to do is get a piece of paper, let each one of the people sign, photocopy it, make a record, send it to the newspapers and your local people. Just like I said, and your local congressman, send it to the city council or whatever the jurisdiction is you're in. Send all of that to them. So you
But understand, he has done that. He has made some significant changes over there in Miami area because of him. And I know that because we were able to connect on this very issue, in that they were being overlooked, but he did exactly what you're talking about. He hasn't just been sitting back and just angry about it. Okay, he has rolled his sleeves up and organized the folks around there, and he's taken it straight to his elected officials and the folks that are supposed to be tasked with doing this. And he has forced them to start hosting meetings and trainings in their area so that they are included. I think he joined in to share, you know, the frustrations and connecting, showing how the dots are connected. But oh no, he hasn't been just sitting back doing nothing.
All right, because I'm sorry, it was just so much echo going on and someone else in chat.
Yeah, I know the echo's gone now, but yeah, we had a whole lot of echo, so it was kind of difficult to really talk because we kept hearing ourselves talking back. But he's been a go-getter for real.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if maybe he had his speakers up or something in his room getting feedback. But yeah, and the other thing is, when you say he's talked to his local officials, the other thing is now with the advent of Twitter and stuff like that, also he should get as many people as he knows online, bombard the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus. They try to ignore you, but taking up too much time, I can tell you, part of how the hookworm thing made it to national media is myself and several other people constantly bombarding the Congressional Black Caucus with Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters. We kept sending them information on Twitter. They didn't want to answer or correspond to us, but the minute that UN high provocateur or whatever his name is came in and saw the hookworms, all of a sudden now you start seeing that there's some commentary on it. As a matter of fact, last night's town hall with Sanders and Warren, they actually had the lady, Miss Flowers, out of Loudoun County. She was on there to talk about the fact that the Black Belt in Georgia, Mississippi, and all through Alabama is doing the same thing to Black people. They're putting infrastructure in all around our homes to leave them with third world conditions, no septic tanks and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
It's a good thing. Tell them, bombard them. Make them show up. Don't just keep it local.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why we're thanking Scotty here, because by him bringing these, you know, bringing us together, others can see that it is out. I mean, it's not just only in our areas. You know, you get caught up so much in fighting on this front locally, you know, and you're pulled in 10,000 different directions, and you just don't realize how big this is until you begin to reach outside of your circle.
All right. Well, thank you again, Otis, for your comments. I want to check back with Brother Rio, see if he got his mic unmuted. Brother Rio, did you want to try to chime in before we close out? Okay.
Did he know to do his
Yes, he was unmuted. That's why I kept going back to him. He was unmuted. But I want to move on. I do have a couple of important news stories to share after our segment with Sister LaDonna. And I just want to thank you for connecting those dots, you and those you work with, and bringing this information to the airwaves, because somebody has to do the research. you know. And without people willing to, so to speak, get their hands dirty and to make the phone calls and to do the research to connect the dots, then, you know, we can't, as a radio station, cannot disseminate information to a wider public. So thank you all. You know, I should be thanking you all for bringing this to the forefront, to the wider public. But did you have anything you want to say in closing? And if you have any contact information that you want to give out or any recommended websites for people to educate themselves further on climate gentrification, please do so.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Because I kept hearing the voice come up.
Yes, I hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's fine. If they send it through you and then you can, you know, send it to us, that'll work. But yeah, they can just actually type in resilient, 100 resilient cities. And in their own states, they can just type in their state name and resilience or resilient, and it will come up because it is everywhere. And this is something that we really all do need to be focusing on, because it definitely is going to be some harmful financial and physical effects that's going to be coming out of this if we don't, you know, connect the dots and really collaborate with each other on what are some solutions that we really can come up with and empower ourselves to, you know, fight back against this. We don't need to rely on them to do that. We can do it ourselves. You know, we want to work with everyone, but if they're not going to work with us in a principled way, then, you know, it's on us to help each other survive through this.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, we got a call from 707. 707, we're at the close, about to close it out, but real quick, if you can share whatever it is you want to share, we appreciate you listening and taking the time to call in, but is there something you wanted to share? 707, I'm sorry, or is that 786? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I'm 707.
Yes, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Eric back in Miami. I think what black people need to do, they need to get online, find out about resiliency, go to and find out who's supposed to be putting these resilient measures into place and ask them what are they doing for resiliency in their community. And resiliency is not just sea level rise. Resiliency is unemployment, it's crime, it's homelessness. So let's not just get wrapped up in this sea level rise that they're talking about. Resiliency is way beyond sea level rise. It's about homelessness. It's about joblessness. It's about racism. It's about how cities snap back from all those type of things. So let's not get just concentrated on sea level rise. This money is being allocated supposed to be to fight all these things that affect low-income people the most. Not the city, but when you read all of their papers, it talks about the most affected, the most vulnerable. And we all know that low-income blacks are the most vulnerable, and Latino people are the people of color are the most vulnerable. So these people need to get online and find out where this money is going, who they're saying is supposed to be helping them, and what are they supposed to be doing so that they can become resilient. But if they're not in your community and you don't see them, they cannot tell you that they're doing resilience. And you know, people say that I come off angry. Understand this. I'm passionate. It's not about anger. But the only problem with anger is this. When it's unjustifiable anger, then there's an issue. But when you have justifiable anger, I don't want anybody say anything calling and telling about anger. When you have justifiable anger, when you have people saying that they're advocating in your community and you're seeing this online, but you're suffering in your community, but you don't see them nowhere working, and then when you call them and say that I don't see you, they have an attitude and they want to push back, and these are brothers and sisters that are supposed to be doing this work, and they're only going to the elitist people of the community, and they're overlooking you. And then when you hold them accountable, they want to have a problem. You're right, I'm angry, and I'm going to stay angry, and I'm going to stay moving forward until there's some kind of justice being done. So when you have brothers and sisters just like that brother called, he automatically assumes, oh, this brother's just angry, he's just full of hot air, all he's doing is a bunch of talking. If he knew the stuff that I did and the work that I do all around the country fighting for the rights of black people, while other black people sit home and talk about brothers and sisters like me being angry. but yet they reaping the benefits of the work that we're doing and not being paid to do, mind you. And these people that are in these organizations are being paid to do this work.
Hey,
while people like
Eric
and LaDonna and other people in these communities are doing this off of our backs.
Right.
But these people are being paid, and then they're talking about they're doing this work, and then when you hold them accountable and you say they're not, they think they're going to push back and not be held accountable. So you're right. I am angry. You're damn right I'm angry. You're going to do what you're supposed to do, and you're not going to be pimping us. And if you're going to be a Judas, you're going down with the rest of them. But
all
you're
right.
going to do what you say you'll do. You're not just going to be writing it online and saying you're doing it. But when I walk out, my house is flooding. And I don't know who you are, and I don't know what you do. And my neighbors in my community don't know what you do. So, no, that's totally unacceptable. So our people need to educate themselves, find out who's responsible for putting resiliency into work, and ask them where are they at in their community, where's the work they're doing, and what are they doing. Besides putting the name of their community online and not following up.
But also,
we
do want to we do want to educate ourselves on various issues, climate change, sea level rise, flooding, because the first thing they want to say is, oh, black people don't get involved in that. They're not concerned with that. They're too busy, you know, trying to figure out where their next dollar is coming from. Well, that part is true, that we're figuring out where our next dollar is coming from, but it's not true that we're not concerned about climate change, which is real, and flooding, which, like Eric says, in their area, they're really impacted by, with King Tide and all that. And out here, our places are flooded out as well. So we are, you know, wanting to get engaged and be engaged in these processes. So it's not true that we're not interested in them. We are, but we have huge battles to fight that no other races have to fight, and that's including Latinos
on many
and
different
others,
fronts
because they
yeah.
get assistance where we don't.
Yeah, on many different fronts. And I just want to thank Eric for his passion and let him know. Listen, I can't take any more calls. I have some information to get out, and I need to close out. We're only supposed to go an hour tonight, but I just want to tell Eric, I actually used to do this radio program under a different title. The name of that program was Angry Black Man. I definitely feel the passion. But Sister LaDonna, I got to get to a couple of news stories. So again, I want to give you opportunity to close out.
Okay, no, you know what? I think Eric summed it up. Scotty, so did you. Appreciate the other callers. And I just want to say thank you for using your platform to bring this to the public.
And thank you again, you and Eric, for the work that y'all are doing out there in the field for the people. Peace and blessings to you, sister. Stay safe behind these enemy lines of USA Inc.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Listen. We got to get ready to get out of here, but I have some breaking news. This actually comes from Otis. He posted it in our chat room. Now, before I came on air, I read a story about another Austin explosion. This one occurred at the FedEx, and they think the package was possibly not, the bomb wasn't targeting FedEx, but they were trying to deliver it to perhaps their intended target through FedEx. But Otis has posted in the chat room, interestingly, and this is breaking news, that there is another explosion. And if I can find it right quick, we got this one. Otis types in the chat room, there has been another explosion in Austin, Texas. This one happened at a Goodwill with at least one person injured, and he shared the link there. I'm sure Otis, if not already, has posted that to btrcommunity.com, but y'all certainly can Google that. Take that serious. I subscribe to a lot of different channels on YouTube, and there's this guy called Pastor McDowell. I don't really watch his program that much, but depending upon the topic and the title, let me see what Pastor Dowell talking about. So he was talking about the Austin stuff today. Pastor Dowell is like former military, Vietnam veteran. He have guns on the wall and you know, on the background. He is a Christian, but he's a survivalist as well. And so just give you kind of an ideal of his personality, his YouTube personality. And I, you know, not to say he doesn't really live like that. I think he does. But Today he posted a video, and I was looking at, okay, what's good out here, some good information I could share on Black Talk Radio Network. Let me see what's going on. So he posted a video. I don't recall the title, but he was saying, he was basically complaining that the FBI had a sign. According to him, I hadn't seen any other, you know, articles detailing how many FBI agents have been assigned to find this terrorist that's blowing up stuff, blowing up people, but said 500 agents. And I'm saying to myself, I can't believe this guy is complaining about 500 agents trying to stop a terrorist that seemingly, just from preliminary evidence, looks like he's targeting Black and non-white people. Most of the victims have been Black and Latino, Hispanic, whatever, you know, however you characterize them. But I heard today that these people that may have gotten hit with the tripwire were white. So you know, now two more explosions, reportedly one at the FedEx Center there in Austin, and another one, Otis has posted a link to an article, another one at the Goodwill. So I'm like, man, I don't understand how anybody's complaining. I've been complaining because I feel like the federal response has not been what it should be. This is a terrorist. You know, I said this early on. If you, you know, targeting Black people, whatever, whoever he targeting, you targeting Americans on American soils, on American soil. And I don't see the United States government, which is supposed to be keeping us safe. Again, I'm being cynical here, but keeping us safe. I'm not seeing a serious response to this. So I was surprised to learn that even 500 agents, this guy is actively bombing, or girl, or group of people is actively bombing people. All right, this is something to be taken serious. All right, so I couldn't believe that he was complaining about that. So, but according to new reports, there's been two more bombings in the last 24 hours. Let me share some other quick information with you in addition to this climate gentrification information. I shared a couple of articles in the thread for BTR News with Scotty Reed in btrcommunity.com, but I shared some other information, and I'm just going to give you some details as I prepare to close out. There was a CNN report, says a resolution denouncing neo-Nazis dies in 36 seconds. So somebody passed a resolution, which a resolution is not a law. It has no weight. You know, I guess that's debatable, but it really carries no force. So what? You say you denounce this, that, and the other, but do you really? You could just be saying that. So when they pass resolutions, just recognize that they don't carry as much weight as laws. Okay, they're just they're making a statement. Oh, as a body, as a legislative body, we're making this statement. This is the majority of us believe this, that, or the other. So let me read a little excerpt. It says it didn't even make it out of committee in the Tennessee legislature. Shout out to Jenna of Foundational Radio based out of Tennessee. The resolution was written by Tennessee Democratic State Representative John Ray Clemens. It doesn't name any particular group. It calls on law enforcement to go after white nationalists and neo-Nazi groups with the same fervor as other forms of terrorism. Okay, well, maybe it's not a resolution. Maybe this is legislation, and CNN hit us off with a misleading title. Because it sounds, you know, based off of reading that portion of the article, it sounds like, hey, he's making the same call I made going for years now, but most recently, what happened in Charlottesville. Y'all keep calling this hate crimes. When I say y'all, I'm talking about the system. And of course, that also includes the masses whose minds are programmed by the system programming, which you call CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. It's all programming. You just got to know how to discern it and not be affected by it. You got to remain objective and look for the facts. All right, so it says it sounds like the kind of legislation that should easily breeze through a state house, even in these politically divided times, a resolution denouncing white nationalists and neo-Nazis. But again, it did not make it out of committee. The resolution, I already read that part. We urge law enforcement to recognize white nationalists and neo-Nazi groups as terrorist organizations, which they are, and to pursue the criminal elements of these domestic terrorist organizations in the same manner and with the same fervor used to protect the United States from other manifestations of terrorism. So in other words, y'all say that we got terrorists in Yemen, we got terrorists in Pakistan, we got terrorists in Afghanistan, we got terrorists in Iraq. And the way y'all deal with them terrorists, regardless of their citizenship status or nationality, is we take them out with drones. We identify them. We you know, gather whatever evidence. Not that we plan to take them to court, not in a war on terror. No, but we gather evidence. We deliberate among ourselves. And then, you know, we decide who goes on this kill list, like the one President Obama publicly acknowledged that he had and carried around in his pocket, called, you know, and then take them out with a drone when they're spotted in public. Yes. Okay. So I don't believe in the war on terror. So don't get it twisted. You can't have war on a tactic. That's what Ron Paul said. I think that's logical, you know, because we find terrorism comes in many forms. There's state-sponsored terrorism like that of police violence in this country, which, of course, we know is connected to slavery. So, you know, terrorism comes in many forms. But in this particular, white nationalists, neo-Nazis. Now, but this is also, I don't want to ramble on about this, but this is what I wrote. This is, they see, and I'm talking about the legislators who voted this down in 36 seconds, however long it took for them. But these white supremacists, they see it as the same as asking them as white supremacists to denounce a core tenet of their religious belief in white supremacy. And that would be blasphemous to a true believer in white supremacy. There are documented trips of Nazi scientists and others who came over here to observe the American system of white supremacy. The Germans refined the American model and then proceeded to rain terror on all of Europe and parts of Africa during Hitler's attempt to establish a 1,000-year Aryan rule. People talk about paperclip. I'm sorry, let me back up off my mic a little bit. I might have been coming in a little too loud. People talk about Operation Paperclip. That's the after World War II, they brought the Nazi scientists over, primarily the rocket scientists, but not just limited to them, in my belief, in my estimation, but brought the Nazi scientists, rocket scientists over to NASA. All right. So everybody know about not everybody, but people who know about such things, they've heard of Operation Paperclip. They didn't just, that's not the American government's first official dealing with Nazis. Nazis came here before World War II. This is documented in history. They came over here to study the eugenics programs that they were running against black people, primarily after the 13th Amendment in the Civil War. Because you wasn't trying you weren't trying to depopulate the country of black people when you was practicing that form of slavery prior to 1865. In fact, you was breeding them like cattle. The more, you know, like Thomas Jefferson said, my wealth increased with every victim of slavery born on my plantation. So, of course, you're not trying to minimize the population growth. But after that, after the Civil War, when you had people who had then been allowed to organize and have weapons and what have you, and you had this major battle, then it became about depopulation. It still remained slavery, you know, through the prisons. That's what the 13th Amendment did, but it became about depopulation as well. And the Americans were so good with their eugenics programs that it impressed the Nazis, and they was like, let us go over here and study this. And they came to the various states and they studied their population control in different experiments. When you talk about gynecology and a so-called father of gynecology who is a South Carolinian, he got that knowledge by experimenting on victims of slavery. They didn't have any anesthetic. Many of them died on the table. But that's how they perfected certain medical procedures, not just outside of gynecology. We can also bring in the dentist, dental health care, and what they practice on these individuals that they were enslaving. That was torture to those humans being used as guinea pigs. And the Nazis knew about this, and they came over here and they studied it. And I don't even want to get into the side issue of many of the same American eugenics people like Henry Ford and others who were later connected to funding, contributing resources to the early Nazi party before they came in control, but when they were fighting for control in Germany as a political party. They were being supported by prominent white supremacists and who were practicing eugenics here in the United States. So Operation Paperclip wasn't the first time that Nazis had been invited into the United States to, you know, talk about what's the best way to exterminate people. All right, last story I want to share with you. I'm just make this real quick, but Donald Trump has nominated this woman, Gina Haspel, to become the next director of the CIA. We know on this program or on this station, we should know the history of the CIA. And it just boggles my mind how I can hear so-called people who should know, people who should be informed about the history of the CIA being a white supremacist organization involved in all manner of injustice all throughout the world, assassinations, and just that history, that short history going back to the 1950s when it came out of, I believe it was the Naval Intelligence, and then that history all the way up to today. Look at Libya now. So I don't understand how these people could be trusting the CIA when you say, oh, the CIA said Russians helped Trump become president. Well, how can you believe liars and killers and torturers like this woman, Gina Haspel, who has been nominated to head the CIA by Donald Trump? She is getting some opposition, but here's my comment. I hear a lot of these Trump supporters and right-wingers talk about Donald Trump draining the swamp, meaning he's fighting against the deep state. That's become a popular term, the deep state. And you don't get any more deep state than the CIA, all right? And so they're talking about Donald Trump is draining the swamp. That's why Comey's gone and all that. And I'm not saying Comey shouldn't be gone, just not for the reasons that you think he should be gone. But I know the long history of the FBI, and they're talking about Donald Trump's draining the swamp. Oh, no, he's not. No, he's not. And his appointment of this woman who destroyed evidence, there's no dispute about this. There's no debate about this. This is widely acknowledged by these officials that Gina Haspel destroyed thousands of hours of waterboarding tapes and other forms of torture that were occurring in Thailand's quote-unquote black site. Secret detention facilities where people they had kidnapped from anywhere on the planet, they kidnapped, took to these places, and then tortured them for information. So you got Democrats and Republicans who are supporting this torturer. All right? So this whole notion, Trump supporters out there talking about draining the swamp, and then those on the so-called left, the so-called resistance, they're all in the gray. Hey, this is all political theater. Both of you have a bipartisan support for a woman who is noted in this particular article by Politico as an architect of the torture program. And this is what you give your energy to. This is what the people that you cite as evidence on Trump doing this, that, and the other, he may have been, but consider your source. They've done a lot worse. And I'm not, you know, not to say I'm taking sides in any of this. I'm just pointing this out. This is the type of society we live in. Like Dave said on Tando Radio Show, these congressmen, these senators, they are serial killers, mass serial killers, or serial mass killers. Maybe that's a more accurate term. Serial mass killers, always voting for war or violence on a global scale. Bomb that country, kill those people, send those drones. All right? And it should be no shock that serial mass killers ain't got a problem with appointing a torturer and a criminal who covered up evidence. There's no dispute about that. Destroyed evidence. Should have been charged with obstruction of justice, but the only person who got charged and went to prison was this black CIA agent. I think his name was Jeffrey Skilling or something like that, who blew the whistle on the CIA torture program. So those are the stories I thought I wanted to share. Real quick before I close out the program, lots of stuff to share, but we can't get it all in, you know, in a matter of hours. So that's why we got btrcommunity.com, which we hope that you will become a member of. Try it out free for 30 days. Then it's just $24 a year. It's one of the ways we try to maintain our financial independence. So with that said, thank you all for tuning in to BTR News tonight, and for all our callers. The information that was shared, of course, from our guest tonight, Sister LaDonna, about this climate gentrification. All right. With that said, recognize we live behind the enemy lines. Slavery was never abolished, and it's being practiced in many different forms. But the one that concerns me the most is the physical enslavement of people on prison plantations. I'm concerned about it all, but that concerns me the most. And I'm angered that for 150 years we've been lied to that slavery was abolished, and then we read the 13th Amendment, we say, and we find out they ain't even do that. All those people died to end slavery, and y'all pull this trick on them. So I'm angry black men out here too, and you should be too. About all, you, I don't care what color you are, you should be angry about the injustice that goes on in this world. All right, with that said, peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there. Peace.